I'm Sandra Dodd, and Pam Sarishian and I want to talk about each other's kids, because I thought it's kind of fun sometimes to hear someone else's perspective on your children. But another thing is, if I knew no unschoolers but my own kids, I could really be nervous about whether my perceptions were valid, right? And it could just be genetics, that I was, you know, zippy noisy and they were too. So it helps a lot to see other kids, and I bet it's helped you to see other people's kids here, you know, other people's kids your age or, you know, a little older. Even if they're wild and crazy, to see that they can be wild and crazy and the parents aren't freaking out. So it's always helped me be around other people's kids. But with Pam's family, it was especially interesting because her kids are all, each a little older than mine, I think. It's like the same spread, just slightly older, and Pam's just, you know, about the same amount. It's like they almost overlaid, these families. And it's really interesting. And the first time I met Pam, she came to pick me up at the airport, and I was immediately comfortable. And as I met her children, I mean, each one of them is different, and they connected with me directly. It wasn't like I was their mom's friend. I was a person to them, and that was really comfortable too. And over the years, mostly because I get invited to California and stay at Pam's house, which is fun for me and poor Pam. And then and sometimes my family's gone too, my whole family. And Pam's been to my house, to my old house, so she can't picture the new house yet. My first impression of Roya, is that no? Can I keep talking, or do you want to come make your part of the intro? All right, well, Pam can wrestle me away from this if she can. My first impression of Roya, I think she was probably about 12. I'm not sure. Pam does the numbers, and I do. I don't know. She was, you know. She has a really direct gaze. She doesn't avert her eyes. She just looks right at you, like inside you, around the corners of you, and I could look right back. So that was good for us. It's like, look at me, I'm looking at you. And she's just very direct and very quick. And she just says what she means, and she says it straight to you. And I loved that, because we can have the fastest conversations. And I hate to do this without seeing Pam's reaction, because I wanted to go, what? You know, then I know it's like, it's like that sort of, what are you talking about? Or yeah, 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 you know, that helps. And I've always really enjoyed Roy, and I know a lot about her because a lot of times I get to stay in her room. She's not home a lot. The older she got, the less she was home, and she had a really interesting room, and it would change. And one year it was all plastered, almost floor to ceiling, with poetry and just sort of rambly writing and really pretty handwriting, you know, interesting handwriting. And I didn't read all of it. Nobody could have. But it was pretty, you know, and it was just the idea of the way she had arranged what was about what and the dates. It was sort of an archaeological deal. And then one year she was doing photography. And there were photographs, really cool photographs, mostly down from the ground close-ups of little kids, and some of them I knew from their homeschooling group, and I recognized them a little bit. And that was neat. So being at someone's house and seeing the kids in their natural habitat, or the habitat even without the kids, is a whole other story too. So I think if, now that you know some families, see if you can go see them at their houses, because seeing what the kids have left in their actual burrows is scientifically interesting. And her, Roya, I wish she was just here, because we wouldn't have to say anything if our kids would just kind of march up here and say hi and introduce themselves. They wouldn't even have to say anymore, you can just tell. Roya's really bright and really intense, and from my point of view, very calm. And should we do this like sort of by layers or by kid? Are we doing the horizontal sort of when they were little? As she got older and wasn't getting along with her mom so well, one weekend I was there and they were really frustrated with her, and there was a lot of you know, that sort of, this is like magnets not attracting, you know, that. And it was interesting because Pam told me, she's so good at these, at the things that she can do, at this interpersonal stuff, and I so depend on her, and she's so smart. I just don't know what to do. I just expect too much of her. And it frustrates me. And Roy, in the meantime, is going, I don't know what my mom wants. I don't know what her problem is. She's driving me crazy. And so I looked at that, and I looked at that, and said, can I go talk to her? And she said, sure, yeah, that'd be great. So then I went and told her what her mom had said, and she just softened all up, and she slowed right down to nothing. And she said, I never knew that. No, it didn't feel to her like her mom thought she was extremely bright and competent. What she was sensing was, I didn't do it right. Whatever the heck it is she wants, I didn't do it right. But it was just that Pam's expectations were that Roya could do things that Pam couldn't do socially and should. You know, she could have done it. It would have been easy for her. I can't do it. Why didn't she do it? And so it was fun for me to be the go-between on that, because Roya would listen to me because I was about to leave. And then Roxana, the first few times I met Roxana, she was hard because she didn't look at me. She looked at me when I wasn't looking. I would always see her look away. And that's how I saw Roxana. And usually in the back of the car with a book, kind of humming. She'd be like tapping her foot or singing a song and reading a book. It's like, I have so many things to do, I can't even know you're there. And she had this big wall of, gosh, I'm busy. And I'd look at her and I'd see her do that. And I don't know what she saw when she looked at me, because I didn't get to see her look at me for a long time. And over the years, she warmed up to me and started talking to me. And my favorite Roxana incident, Pam's afraid for me to tell, but that's okay, because my daughter Holly was little at the time, probably 6, 7. And she had a neighbor across the street who had gotten the video for Cats, and they're watching it a lot. And she said, you want to watch this? And I looked at it and I said, it's like opera, it's like ballet, and they're dressed like cats. And she said, yeah, it's really good. And I said, what's it about? And she said, so that was Holly's explanation, I don't know. And so a year passed or so, and I was at Pam's house, and Roxana was just watching it all the time. She was online about it, writing to people who had performed in New York, and just knew all the trivia. She knew who was in and why they quit and how much they used to make and how much, everything. There was nothing she didn't know. And the people at her house were the same way I was. It looks like, you know, opera, and they're dressed like hats. But I thought, okay, you know, I can't stand to have a 6-year-old tell me, but Roxana is obviously bursting with this desire to communicate, you know, just a missionary zeal. And I said, okay, show it to me. Really? So we sat down and we watched Cats with her telling me what was going on and her answering my questions. And that, for me, was great, because I didn't have to watch it 3 or 4 times and figure it out on my own. I'd say, what? And she'd roll it back, you know, rewind back and say, this is so-and-so, they're doing this, and this is going to come back in a couple of songs. I'm like, wow. Okay. And I got to impress her because she wanted to know about the Heaviside Layer, and I have a friend who's real interested in the history of electricity, and I called him at work and said, Jeff, what is this? And he told me what to look up, because there was an old dictionary. Was the old dictionary at your house or Jeff's? Yeah, there was like this 1920 or something, a really old dictionary, and that's where you had to look, because it was a concept that was current then, and it's like now disregarded. So that was fun, because I had resources. History of electricity and atmosphere resources. And so I, when I went home, I could watch Cats with Holly. And so for me, that was a huge opportunity for me to learn something I hadn't learned. And it was fun for Roxana to find somebody who was willing to... I had time because I wasn't home. You know, I didn't have to do the laundry, I didn't have to do the dishes. I just sat and watched it with Roxana. And I think her dad, Cyrus, I love Cyrus. He's so sweet, and I have a lot of fun with him. But he was a little baffled, I think, that I would bother. But I think he was grateful too, because he didn't have to hear it for a few hours. So, and then there was Rosie, and Rosie would look at me very sweetly. She has the sweetest little face, and it's all bright and lit up, but she wouldn't really talk to me. But I would see her interacting with other people, and when she was with the other kids, she's just a little rose. She's just totally like a lit up flower. I don't know how to describe her. She's just so sweet, and she's so... Everywhere she goes, it just lights up that place. But I've never talked to her very much. But every time I hear about what she's doing, I wish I was doing that. I wish I had her life. And she's done all kinds of really neat theatrical kinds of little things, dancing and singing kind of stuff. And they're always singing. That family, I loved it. I'd be in the car and they'd put on some tape, and they're all just really singing full voice and really nicely. And I got some songs from them. Pam made me a tape of some of their favorites, you know, the Best of Pam's Car kind of thing. And Holly still listens to those all the time. She's listened to them the week before I left. And so their family has helped my family's life a lot. And I probably think of something else, but I'm going to give Pam a turn.
I stopped in Albuquerque on my way to Dallas, and Sandra and I went to Dallas to a conference together some years ago, 6 years ago or 5 years ago or something. And her kids actually weren't there. Holly was there, and Holly went with us. The boys and her husband were gone. Had gone camping. It was Memorial Day weekend, and they picked me up at the airport, and I got in the car, and Holly was in the back seat, and she was 5, 6, some little, and it was almost summer, right? It was summer, and from the back seat, she sort of piped up, you know, "Mom, I really want some plums," and Sandra kind of said, "Oh, okay, we'll get you some plums." Said to me, "Do you mind going by the grocery store on the way home?" No, that'll be fun. It's actually fun to go to the grocery store in other people's cities and stuff like that, right? And so we went to the grocery store, and it's early for plums in season, and they didn't have any. But I think Holly was pretty sure she'd seen plums either, I don't know, somebody's house, or she'd seen them in a store or something. So Sandra said, well, let's just try another store. And we were just chatting, talking in the front seat, and Holly was just waiting to get her plums. And we got to another store and ran in the other store a little bit, and I forgot now if we got plums in that store. We actually went to a third. I think we might have actually gone to a third store. And we got a little bag of plums and drove back to their house, and Holly was happily munching plums in the back seat, and Sandra and I were chatting nonstop. And there were all kinds of other wonderful things that happened that weekend, and it was great. When I came back, I got to actually meet Marty and Kirby and Keith, and it was all kinds of wonderful things. But this was an amazingly momentous thing that happened about these plums. And I know Sandra thinks I'm funny because I keep talking about this plum thing. But I had really understood unschooling, but I understood it as not doing school. You know, not doing curriculum, not doing tests, not giving grades, you know, not pre-planning their education. And I had really understood it as, you know, supporting their interests, but in my mind they were still pretty much, you know, academic interests, you know, support their academic interests, kind of encourage those and facilitate those. And I hadn't really fully emotionally, I guess, made the jump to what unschooling would really mean. And that weekend, and it started with the plums, turned into a really a change for me in terms of understanding unschooling as also a parenting and family lifestyle issue, because I understood it as a saying yes philosophy, as a supporting, getting in just the habit of being supportive. It wasn't going to matter to us at all if we spent the whole evening going from grocery store to grocery store, because all we wanted to do was talk. And we could do that and drive, and I got to drive around Albuquerque, which was cool. I'd never been there, and it was wonderful. But it just struck me that even I, who was a very generous parent and a very kind parent, would never have at that point driven off to another grocery store, and then another. I probably would have said, okay, next time I go to the grocery store, I'll see if I can find you some plums. I wouldn't have said, okay, we'll stop and get you some now. Holly was great. She wasn't like begging or nagging or anything, whining. She just was like very sweetly and simply said, you know, Mom, I'd really like some plums. Okay, so Sandra's instant and immediate reaction was to say, okay, let's see if we can make that happen. And I was so struck by it. Holly was totally grateful and appreciative. She thanked her a lot. You know, she totally got it that we'd driven around looking for them, and she told us how much she'd enjoyed them. You know, she ate several in the car. And I was like, oh, these are good, thank you. I really like this. And I was changed by this one little tiny experience, because I got it that unschooling is a big, huge change in your relationship, that it's a relationship change with your kids, and that you have to say yes as often as you possibly can. Well, then I got to, eventually, and I got to meet, actually I had met Kirby and Marty once earlier, but I got to know them better, and they came and they stayed at my house, and we spent a lot of time together, so I got to see what the results were of saying yes all the time. And it certainly wasn't a bunch of spoiled brat kids, which is what, you know, standard people in the neighborhood would say. You know, they were considerate and kind and thoughtful and very, very trustworthy. One of the things that struck Sandra was that when they were all at our house once, and all of us adults all went off and went to bed and left the boys and the girls, you know, her boys and my girls. She has the two older boys and I have three girls, and we left them all just sleeping in the living room. And later she said, did you guys even think about this? Did you worry about the fact you're leaving your girls out there sleeping with our boys in the living room on the floor? You know, there was no way we would have thought about that. No way we would have worried about that, had any hesitation, because the spirit of these kids was so authentic and genuine, and they weren't going to do anything that we wouldn't be happy about. There was no way. It was just not going to happen. So I think that what I got out of my getting to know Kirby and Marty and Holly was really, for me, it was, they're wonderful and I enjoy them a lot, and I do have things I could say about them, but it was much more me watching Sandra and them is what I got out of it. And so the things I have to say are a lot more like watching her instant reaction to say yes every time. One time when I saw Sandra have to say, you know, no, because we were late to get to the airport. Holly didn't want to leave, and we had to go because we were late, and Holly was really unhappy. I saw her have to do it. You know, we had to leave. We couldn't miss our plane. And I saw her talking to Holly, and you know, we had to take her. She was unhappy and crying, and I saw them. I saw how to do that and do it still. We had to physically take her, and how to do it gently with the minimum amount of, you know, hurt and total understanding that it was reasonable for her to be upset and not want to go, and talking about what else we would be able to do and how we could get back together with her friends later and what was going to happen. And she was six. It was hard for her to understand. I learned from watching that interaction so much. And my kids are so lucky that they had that. They got me to watch that. So what I would want to say is that it's really very useful for people with young children to hang around with moms who have experience and have calmed down and kind of know how to do these things. That's one. But the other one is that unschooling is far more than just not doing school. Because when you say you're going to be supportive of your children's passions and interests, it doesn't mean I'm going to be selectively supportive. Okay? It means that if their interest is that they want to taste plums, that you find plums. Then what I saw was total turnaround. I slept in Marty and Kirby's room and kind of occupied it, and lots of their stuff was there and their games and the things they wanted to do. They lived in a little small house in those days, and they were gracious about it. No, there was no question in their minds. There was no complaining. They were nice to me. They made sure that I had what I needed. They got me a light because they thought I might want to read in bed, you know.
My concern about leaving the boys there was I grew up in a family with four girls, and I knew the attitude of my dad about boys being where he couldn't see, you know, his girls. And I didn't know Pam's husband that well to know how he felt about that, because I'd always been around with their all girls. And he's Iranian, and I didn't know what their attitude was about, you know, big stinky boys from other states. And then, because that nighttime thing wasn't the worst. Keith and I were out in a camper trailer. We weren't even in the house. And then a bunch of us went to the mall and left, one of them left Kirby, I think. Marty went with us to the mall, maybe, and Kirby stayed there with some of the girls. And nobody was there. No adults were there. And, yeah, they were all calm. And I trust my boys, but coming from a family of girls, I don't expect anybody else to trust my boys. These are all good. I'm not afraid of them. Okay. juggling kids, making connections with two competitive children, like children who are competitive of each other or competitive in the whole world. We try to arrange to separate kids subtly, you know, not in the sort of timeout or just get away from them kind of way. But one of my best tricks has been if it's the proximity that's the problem and one of them's about to go ballistic and, you know, grab the other one by the throat or something, I just say, could you help me get that thing out of the car? You know, anything physical and separated, take one away for a real reason, and they both calm down. But if it doesn't look like they were hauled away, I think that's a trick probably I learned teaching, though, because another teacher told me if two boys are in a fight, never grab the winner, because he'll hurt you, grab the loser, because he wants to be rescued. He saves face, the other one saves face, and you don't get hurt. And so even when it's not a physical fight, that tends to work. If you figure out which one's the underdog and say, Marty, I really need help in the garage. Could you help me for a minute? He feels important. The other guy says, if you'd have stayed here, I'd have kicked his ass. And you know, it's over. But you might not have boys. You might not be thinking about that. But even and well, you tell a girl story, because you have girls.
How do you juggle three demanding little girls making connections with competitive children who are competitive with each other? I have that. My middle child's competitive with both the older and the younger, for sure. You know, close your eyes and open them again, and they'll be older. You know, just enjoy it. Even when they're being competitive and they're demanding of your time, you've got two sides and a lap. And enlist the older ones to baby the younger ones a little sometimes. Enlist the younger ones to be helpful. Don't worry about it too much, because that'll stop. That'll pass. You can see the pictures that I'm passing around. There are other people in those pictures besides my children. Those are important people in our lives, my family and close friends and homeschooling group. And there's one picture of Roya and Rosie hugging each other. And, you know, there were years where Roya had big things she wanted to go do, and Rosie's 6 years younger and needed to stay home and didn't want to be in that car seat one more time. And it was just difficult and hard, and look at them in this picture. They just adore each other. And now Roy is off, and she's been gone for 2 months, She's been home for one day while I was here, and now she's going to be gone for 3 more months. And Rosie wants to call her sometimes every 2 hours. She misses her a lot. And so competitive has made way for loneliness and missing her. And the competitiveness between the middle child and the older and younger is gone, because the older child is kind of off and on her own thing. And now the two younger ones are really close and have really developed their relationship. It's just the mom's tired. You know, the parent is tired when you're feeling pulled in all directions. And that's just life with little kids. You know, there are all kinds of little things that you already know. Even whoever asked the question, you know what to do. You know how to, you know, send one of them off with somebody else whenever you can and have special time with each one. And even if it's 5 minutes of real focused time and looking in their eyes and touching them and, you know, making sure that you're not too busy to spend those few minutes when they need it. Sticking one in the you know, bedroom with some special toy while you get to give the other one a bath. And, you know all those things. What you really need to know is that it's okay and that it will pass and that you'll miss it. I can't tell you how much I miss the three little girls in the steamy bathroom all wanting me to, you know, be washing them or toweling them dry, and, you know, all those moments when they were all pulling on me and one of them fighting over who was going to sit in my lap. You know, you'll miss those days, so don't regret them. Just enjoy them. Enjoy it no matter how uncomfortable and tired you are and your eyes are bleary and all you wish you could do is go to the bathroom and actually lock the door.
Shut the door
and have it actually stay shut, you know. Okay, talk on the phone. You know, it'll be so fast. And I know it's hard to believe how fast it'll be, but everybody that's got older kids, Maureen's back there going, you know, they know. Just enjoy it. Enjoy that. Enjoy the competition itself. Embrace it. And just know that that's really normal. That shows they've got good, strong, you know, willpower, and they're out to get something. They're going to go after what they want. You know, they're always going to want someone to love them and want to be close to other people, and that's good. This is a good thing. Okay, I'm here without my children. Anne's talk made me go, I had to leave her talk the other day, yesterday, and go call my kids because they're too busy to be demanding my attention. So that's the answer.
Marty had a hard time because Kirby hit puberty, and there were a few years in there when Kirby just didn't want to have Marty play with him or hang around with his friends and would say so. I mean, it's enough that he knows it without it being said again and again. And just about a year and a half ago, I'd noticed that Kirby was letting Marty hang out, inviting him to go with him places and stuff. And I said, Kirby, I really appreciate you including Marty in some of this stuff when I know you wouldn't have to. And he said, Marty's cool. And that was neat. I know there's a temptation to schedule and measure and say, okay, he got to go out to dinner with you, so each one of them has to go out to dinner with you. It has to be of comparable expense, formality, and time. But that's not what kids want. I mean, some might be really going, hey, that cost $19 and mine only cost $12, you owe me. But I think pretty much they need what they need, and one of them might seem to you cheap and easy and small, and to them it might be huge. So if somebody just got a new Xbox and the other one went to camp and the third one's saying, what about me? What they really might need is that you write a letter to Grandma saying that he has been the most wonderful human ever, the sweetest guy, and you're so proud of him. And he, you know, something like that can mean so much more to a kid than we think with our little balance sheets of time and money. And so don't wait till you can afford another $8 worth of stuff if what they really want is to go with you to the store and have your undivided attention for an hour. And don't underestimate the value of just holding them in your lap or lying down with them till they go to sleep, because.
I'm thinking of a few of the things that I did do when they were younger, and one of them was each of my girls separately had their own secret I love you hand squeeze. Okay, and I don't know if the other, if I think they know that each other had one, but it was secret. We would do it quietly, and so, you know, one of them was like a just I love you. It started with the oldest. It was just I love you. I would just go I love you, and then I expected a I love you too. Okay, and so, you know, at kind of stressful moments or when I was starting to feel, you know, anticipating this is always important, and you get that with time. And when I would start to feel that she was getting a little left out, and the younger kids were taking up a lot of my time, you know, a lot of times I would head it off with just a reaching over and taking her hand and just doing the little secret I love you hand squeeze. And then the other two I just made one up, and we did one for each of them. Little nothing things, but it could head off a big problem. The other thing was that to enlist the slightly older child, I mean, I'm talking even if you're talking about a four-year-old and a two-year-old, and that's to enlist the slightly older child in feeling like it's the two of you being proud of the little one or helping out the little one. And then when it's the littler child, again, feel on the same team, you know, that it's the two of you being proud of, look what the older one can do. So if the older one's able to do, you know, something on the monkey bars and the little one can't do it yet, it's the two of you going, wow, look what Johnny can do, isn't that cool? And together being proud of them so that they kind of get that built in. And it won't work really well sometimes, but over time that'll happen. And that's worked really well in our family. You know, the girls are really proud of each other.
I don't care which one.
Okay, video games, computer, TV use, obsession. Is it? My kids take any open time and plug in. How do you get them to choose other options? I've allowed them to plug in as much and whenever they want, but I'd like to see them choose other activities also. Sandra talked in my hometown once and said something that everybody there has used a million times when talking to each other, and it's like a code word now, so we all know what it means. But she was talking, she doesn't know this. She was talking to an audience like this, and there were open windows, big, huge, wide open windows behind her, and we had flowering peach trees in bloom, and they were back there, and the sky was blue. This is Long Beach, California. It was just a gorgeous day, you know, 72 degrees, and just as beautiful as it could be. And she was standing with her back to it, and the audience was looking at it. But the speaker before her had closed all the blinds, had gone up and purposely shut all the blinds. Okay, Sandra got up and started to talk and then said, oh, hang on a second, and went and opened all the blinds and said, if I'm not more entertaining than a flowering peach tree, I'm in trouble. You know, I need to be able to entice you to listen to me, and if not, then you're better off watching the trees. Okay. And, you know, I'm sure there were some people who probably kind of went back and forth a little, you know, and watched the trees and listened to her and, you know, stuff like that, because they were just beautiful. And ever since then, when this topic of computer games and TV and these things that us adults worry about the kids spending too much time on comes up, somebody in my homeschool group will mention it, and somebody else will go, I don't know, got to open those blinds. You know, you don't want to just close the blinds to keep them from seeing it. That's lame. You know, you should make your life more enticing. That's your challenge. And if you can't, and if it's not, then there's something big there going on for that kid, and they should be doing that. Okay, so I'll let Sandra talk more about it, but in my group, people can just say, those are just flowering peach trees. You leave the blinds open. Okay, let them enjoy it. And then if you think they've spent enough time gazing at the flowering peach trees and you want to get their attention somewhere else, then that's your job. Make it more exciting, more entertaining, more fun, more satisfying in some way.
When parents say, I don't want them to watch video games, I want them to play with each other, I want them to be creative, I want them to listen to me, that just reminds me of teachers I had who painted over the windows or put construction paper up over all the windows or put kids' art up all over the windows so that they were the most exciting thing. And I just thought that was rude. And especially with unschooling, I believe that unless the kids have a choice, then they have no choice. And that, I mean, it's really profound. If they're not choosing to be where they're being, then they can't possibly be at full learning speed, at full happiness potential. And so if they have a choice between doing one thing and another thing, they will choose the best thing. Why wouldn't they? Unless they're really depressed, you know? And so if you think the best thing is reading a book you read when you were little, and they think the best thing is playing this new Star Wars Xbox game, which is what's the thing at my house this week, then they probably know what's best for them. And I think it's easier to get over your own disappointment than to change their life to be a miniature of your life. But I have found that by letting my kids play all the video games they want, watch all the movies they want, and listen to all the music they want, that they don't always do it. And I don't know what else to say. If there is no better option, if their option is watch that game or go sit still, or watch that game or go back in your room and play with the same toys you've played with, that certainly they're going to do that. But if you offer them something better, and I'm not saying you have to offer them amusement parks every day to get them away from video games, and in some cases that won't work anyway. In some cases, the video game is better than an amusement park. You couldn't offer them anything to get them off a game that they're really obsessed with. But I think if you provide variety and opportunities that are attractive to them, then they'll want to do that as the most attractive thing because they're smart kids and they want to do what's new and attractive. But don't be so mean about the games because they're pretty wonderful. We have that new game and you can either play as a bad guy or a good guy, and every time you make a decision, it sort of rates whether that was the thing a good guy would have done or a bad guy, and you can become more good or more bad. There's some recognition. I wish Marty was in here because I asked him if he would tell this, but he's off having fun. I'm sorry to the father of whoever those teenage girls are. He's falling around. Don't hurt him.
Hi, Mom.
Hey, Marty, come here.
What am I supposed to
tell them about when you how you're measuring out that game so you didn't play it all at once? Remember you told me you played it.
Oh yeah. What was the problem? It was somebody.
Tell the game. Talk right. No, here. you were saying that you didn't want to play that game all at once. You wanted to measure it out into sections so it lasts.
Oh right. Yeah, we were talking about people spending too much time on one game, and I explained to her how I could play one game all day, but then it would get boring, and by the time I beat the game in like 2 or 3 days, then I'd have no more game to play. So I told her how it's what my usual time span is. I usually beat like a planet a day. The planets
name
are
the
like...
Name the game that you were...
Oh, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic. It's the game she just explained to you with the good and evil meter. And it takes me about 2 days to get through one planet. There are 5 planets, so I have like a week to play the game.
And that you measure it out.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. So, well, he told me better at home. That's okay. Thank you, Marty. Thank you. Thank you.
I can get a microphone.
Yeah, that's brave.
So, our shy Marty.
Right. What he told me is he didn't want it to all disappear at once. And I've been that way with books. It's like I could read it all, but I'll put it down and come back tomorrow. So he gets some time to think about it and process what happened. So he sort of measured himself, not because I'd be impressed because I didn't even know, but because that way the game would. You get more, you know, time and money's worth if it lasted him a week or two instead of it lasted him one long, long, long day where he forgot to eat. I have delivered food to them many times at the game if they have a new game. I just realize I haven't seen him for a while, and I just go make them some food and take it to him. I could say, find a pausing place, come out and eat at this table, but the advantage is not sufficient for me if the goal is to get food in them. And it's worked out really well. They have, we counted the other day, I think they have 8 working game systems right now, all in operation, all with games. It's like the working game museum. Marty's counting. It's taking him a while.
He's forgetting some.
Do computers count?
My kids spend a lot of time on the computer, and my youngest child plays video games and borrows games from people, and we have 2 working game systems at the moment, one of them borrowed from someone. And they play Sims. If you're familiar with Sims, that's a very lengthy, never-ending game, you know. So, and there are always new and interesting things you can buy to add to it. And they can sometimes spend a lot of time on it. So I don't want to be misleading and say that you know, they're self-limiting in the sense that they'll go in there and like set the timer and go, okay, I'm going to get off of here in 30 minutes or something, you know. But so do I. Spend a lot of time on my computer, some of you can tell. And what one of the solutions for us was to have a lot of systems and a lot of computers in the house, because then we weren't doing it sequentially, because there was a while where, because everybody was waiting for their turn, that nobody, there was never a time that our whole family was actually, you know, not sitting in front of, you know, somebody was always sitting in front of a screen. And so having more systems and more computers was actually better, because then we can say, you know, at 7 we're going to watch this movie if you guys want to come watch, and everybody would be free to come watch a movie together. Oh, I guess that's sitting in front of a screen together, but okay. Notice that Marty's here. Okay. He was able to tear himself away, you know. Marty goes a lot of places. I've seen him a lot of places. There can be long periods of time where that's all they want to do. Last night, yesterday, I took pictures of a bunch of kids sitting in front of the screen in the other room. And what I did was I stood there and I waited to capture interactive moments, you know, moments when the kids were interacting with each other, because it was really cool to see one of the kids who was kind of sitting in the back row jump up and lean over the shoulder of the kid who had the controls in his hand, and they would like animatedly talk to each other for a few minutes, and then the usually younger kid would sit down, and you could tell he'd just gotten some advice, you know, and he'd like try it out, and then you'd see all the kids, maybe 10 or 12 of them all going, yay, together, and they were very together. They weren't sitting there alone. They were interacting. You know, they were certainly as together as a bunch of guys going to a baseball game are and watching the baseball team play. there were more together than that, because they were playing and they were about to get their turn, you know. And my kids play like that sometimes, and sometimes they just play by themselves for hours. My children's computer use time has turned into really wonderful writing. My two older girls particularly are writers. My middle daughter has created 100-and-something websites, and they're lovely and wonderful, and she has decided to take computer programming classes, and she's learned how to do all these things, and she's created some mucks or muds or mushes or whatever those things are, role-playing games that she's actually...
Mud.
No, there's a whole bunch of them, whatever. And she's written them herself, programmed them, and kids are playing them, and there's one that's been going on for about a year and a half, and there's about 25 kids involved, and she runs it. My oldest daughter writes poetry and participates on lists and talks about poetry, and she just got a poem published in Cicada magazine. And you know, so these things have eventually... We forgot to tell you the ages of the kids, I think.
It's in the book.
Okay.
It's in the little book,
so
we enlisted their names and ages. Sorry, we forgot.
My daughter that's 18 doesn't sit around and play computer games hardly at all anymore, rarely. But she's still on the computer because she's IMing and writing and talking and stuff like that a fair amount. My middle daughter still plays computer games a lot. She mostly plays on Neopets website and plays Sims. And the youngest one, and she does a lot of that, role-playing games. The youngest daughter does more of the game systems type, video game type play, and a little bit on Neopets and Sims. And that doesn't seem to have stopped them from doing all kinds of other things. So although there would have been weeks and months where I would have kind of made that same kind of statement that people like to make, was, oh, my kid doesn't sit in front of the screen. You know, it's just really not true. So one thing might be to help feel better about it yourself would be to maybe keep a little journal of the other things they're doing, on the one hand, and also maybe to write down and spend a little more time talking to them about what they're doing and understanding the games a little better and getting a better feeling for what they are getting out of that game. And then the other thing I still think is that instead of considering setting limits, because that's usually where people are going with this question, is should I just go ahead and say only 1 hour a game, or 1 hour a day, or 2 hours a day? Instead of actually setting those kinds of limits, if that's really your goal, is to limit them to a certain amount of time, don't do it that way. Find other things. Make it your job to have other, more fun, exciting things to do.
Can I add just one thing to that? If you set a limit, your child will do that every day. You want them to play video games an hour a day, tell them that's all they'll
get. Deborah says if you set a limit, you're guaranteeing they're going to take that amount. And I've seen kids do that. They can only watch TV an hour a day, and they will cross rivers, climb mountains to get their hour. Where my kids might go a couple of days and it never gets touched, they don't remember. Holly watches a lot of TV, but she watches TV like a sociologist. She's really interested in the 60s and 70s, sociologically speaking. You know, I mean, and any commercials, but old commercials. But she's watching Mary Tyler Moore on DVD. We get them from Netflix, and she's curious about why was this funny? You know, what's the deal? Well, why did they make a whole TV show about somebody who was divorced and moved to another city by herself? And it's hard for me to realize, because that changed so gradually, that was worth making a sitcom about. And she watches movies like Hair, and we watched Woodstock, and she didn't care about the musicians. I mean, it was a little interesting to her, Santana, which she liked. But you know, she was interested in the shots of hippies, and she said, "Why is it a big deal that they have naked babies?" And so I'm trying to explain the whole, you know, dress code of the 50s and World War II and how the United States was to be a utopia of suburbia, and she's not just watching it for the joke. She's like, why is this so interesting? Why was this worth filming? And so sometimes when it just if you just look at it as by the clock and by the activity, you know, snapshot sort of, she's sitting in front of the TV again. Think about what is the kid doing? What is she thinking? And if you can't possibly tell because they're just sitting there and looking zoned out, don't worry about that either. I have a page where I'm collecting TV stories and links, and it's centerdod.com/TV. That's easy to remember. There's one on video games. It's harder to remember. It's games/page. But that I've collected a lot of links, mostly homeschoolers, not all, people talking about games. And a lot of the stories are just the same sort of thing. I used to want to limit it. It scared me. And here's what happened when I didn't. Some really great accounts by other moms. So you don't have to take my word for it.
I'm going to embarrass Marty again here. But, I spent a fair amount of time in places with Marty and Kirby and Holly where there was really kind of nothing to do, because they're visiting and we had to go get food, so we'd go to a you know, like a little restaurant. We're just basically sitting at a table and waiting for our food to arrive and eating and stuff. And they are incredible conversationalists, just absolutely fascinating. There's never a minute that there's not a interesting conversation going on with them. And these are the kids that spend a lot of time playing video games and love video games, and yet it hasn't stifled their ability to think and their ability to talk, and they probably spend way more time on it than my kids do. So it's interesting to me to see that there's never a moment where there's not something interesting to talk to them about. They're fascinating kids. You know, that's one of those things where I kind of expect my kids to be like that to me, because they're my kids and I'm interested in them, and you know, it sort of goes without saying that I find them fascinating and interesting. But when it's somebody else's kids and you know that they're doing the unlimited TV, unlimited video games, unlimited computer kind of thing, it's very striking that they're fine. I don't know where they're doing it. I think it's because they stop and talk. You know, it's just from having all those conversations. And so that's another thing to do, is don't just because they're off playing games doesn't mean you can't chat and talk to them and talk about interesting things and utilize the time that you do have with them very productively in terms of being with them, you know, really, really, truly with them when you are with them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Marty says, yeah.
Talk to us.
Marty usually sleeps till noon, sometimes 1. And this weekend, every morning, I've assumed he might want to sleep. Or the night before, he says, yeah, wake me up, I want to go to breakfast with you guys. And I think, yeah, right. And so I've let him sleep a little long each morning. And this morning, I woke him up 15 minutes before we were supposed to be there. And I said, Marty, do you really want to go with us, or do you want to sleep? So I'm going. He's gotten up every day. And I'm not saying you can make every day like this, because if it was like this for a month straight, he'd be sleeping till 1 or 3, because those drapes are great. But if something's exciting enough to do, they'll do it. For a long time, people said, well, how will your kids learn to get up and go to work if they don't have to? You know, they need to start practicing every day for years and years. Kirby sleeps late, too. He'll stay up and play games until he falls asleep on the controller, you know, or falls asleep typing at the keyboard, and, you know, wakes up with a, you know, row of zeros and gets in the bed. Well, when they put... How old were we? Was he when we moved, like 11 or something? When they put Ninja Turtles on at 6:30 in the morning, or 6 or some 7 or something, he wanted to record it. And he has tapes and tapes that he painstakingly copied the name of the movie out of the TV guide or whatever, you know, that he made when he was a kid. And he got up every morning, he set his alarm, got up, set the tape, went back to sleep, woke up, wound back to the end of it to set it for the next day, and he didn't fail. Because if it was worth doing to him, and for him as a little kid, it was worth recording Ninja Turtles. And he did that. And when he has a job, in the first year, he's been working since he first turned 14, and the first year I used to go wake him up and make sure he got up and took a shower and all that, make sure he had clothes. And lately, in the last year, I've totally forgotten sometimes, and one single time he was late. We both, you know, I didn't back him up and he didn't set his alarm. But usually I go up there when it's about an hour at a time and he's already in the shower. He doesn't even need me anymore, and he's just turned 17. So I'm impressed. I would have thought I would have to help him the whole time until he moved out and his girlfriend or wife had to help him. Now that's not a horrible assumption, because I'm willing to, you know, elbow my husband if it's sun's up and he's not. But it didn't happen. Even my lightly not so dire prediction didn't happen. You want to do the attention span thing? I set it down. Here it is.
Okay, my child has focusing problems that make him feel stupid. He has wonderful ideas. He's very creative and enjoys various activities. We continue to help him build upon his strengths, but wonder if medication would help him even more. What are your opinions on this subject? His focusing is not just a problem in education, but in memory aspects of everything. Of course, I don't know your son, whoever it was, so I can't say that. You know, your son is your son, and you'll know better. But my guess is that if he wants to focus on something, he's going to focus on it. And I bet that if you think about it, that there are things he focuses on, like video games, or, you know, maybe things that you don't really want him focused on. So older children's teenage now and young adult friends talk about, and they talk about it with a great deal of hostility if they were medicated when they were young. And they're very resentful that it was done to them. And I know quite a few young men in their early 20s to whom they were medicated in and out of school. Mostly they were in school, and then that's why I know them, is because eventually they were just taken out of school and homeschooled. And it's very interesting to me that their attitude towards it is very, very resentful.
So that's something else to consider, is not just medicating to make them be able to focus on things you want them to focus on or have better memories or whatever, but also the other implications, the other messages that they're getting because of that. And maybe, you know, if you're interested in talking to some young men who did have supposedly all these different things, ADHD, D, B, C, A, I don't know, that to talk to them directly, you know, you can do that. If you come ever to California to the Sacramento conference, they have a young adult panel, and there are usually about 15 or 20 young adults on that panel, and people get a chance to talk to them, and they're you know, I don't know if the ones who are medicated and think it was great just don't talk, but I always hear from these young men who complain about the fact that people didn't like them the way they were, and that they will always talk about the situation, the circumstances they were in as having been the problem, and that people didn't just, you know, understand how they needed to live and didn't support them, and they're very resentful that they got medicated. But the Feingold diet is being recommended as a wonderful alternative to medication, and this is again something that I've heard over and over and over and over again from people, that it's a big pain, but it's really well worth it. Feingold.com, Feingold.org, Feingold.org. It's really important, she's saying, to really use their diet, not try to just wing it on your own, because it's hard to know exactly what's in things that you buy, even though it's on the label, that what goes on the label is not necessarily the full information of what might be in that product, and it's important to use the real diet and go to the website and learn about it and get the book. Okay, so there's a good recommendation, practical one.
I wouldn't say never medicate a child, because I don't know that child and I don't know that situation, but I would not myself, unless it was that you'd tried a dozen other things for quite a while. And one thing you can't help but try is they get older. And Pam and I left yesterday at one point because we thought if we stayed, we're going to say this thing, which is, you know, some we each had a very difficult young child who isn't difficult anymore, but that doesn't help when your kid is six for somebody with a 17 or 18 year old to say, or you know, 17 year old to say, well, you know, just, you know, call me in 10 years, you know, take an aspirin, call me 10 years, because you need something to do today. But things do change, and I think as diet goes, I thought it was just my oldest and youngest, but Marty figured out that some problems he was having with waking up in a panic happened when he didn't eat protein. So we really have concentrated on making protein easily available, because Kirby and Holly get cranky headaches. I do too. Keith doesn't. Keith can go on carbs for a week and be just as happy as he ever was. And Marty didn't seem to have those other symptoms, but he would wake up sometimes in a panic. He was a sleepwalker when he was a little kid. And he would, and he figured out on his own by trying to figure out what the similarities were in those days that he hadn't eaten for a while before he went to sleep, and or he had just eaten chips or potatoes or what, you know, some bread. And another thing I think is just environment in general. Some kids are just too crowded. They're introverted kids who are being kept in activity, and expectation, and they really needed to get still. And so their response to not being still enough is to spin out even more. And they may just need a darker place by themselves to do something quiet. And sometimes first aid, you know, a moment of breathing or focus can calm down what would have been an hour of spinning out beyond their own control. And I know it won't work with every kid, but it's worth trying. Just for me, I had a really bad headache this morning. And, you know, I took pills, but I also went away, went to the bathroom, walked in a hall by myself, and breathed. Because if I had kept talking, kept looking at people, kept thinking, I have a headache, I'd have a killer headache now. But teaching kids those tricks, it's like they don't need an hour of meditation in a garden with a fountain. They just might need, you know, 30 seconds to walk to the car the long way in the shade where you're saying it'll be okay, breathe. And I realize it's not going to cure all problems, but don't get drugs or you know, go on extreme diets without trying some smaller, less invasive, more peaceful things too. Easy stuff. And that can lead into books, huh?
One more first. Almost every time that someone asks this question and I actually talk to the individual, I find out their child is pretty young and that I think personally their expectations are actually just too high. And you know, to be honest, I don't expect my 12-year-old to focus very much on something that I think is important. She'll be fine, because I've got two other older ones, so I have lots of confidence. You know, I know that. But if you're talking about a 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 11 or 12-year-old boy, you know, my best advice is for you to relax and focus more and more, as you're saying, focus on their strengths and enjoy them. And that read about child development, read The Hurried Child by David L. Kind, read Miss Education by David L. Kind, read The Book of Learning and Forgetting by Frank Smith, and read anything else about child development, and maybe you'll feel a little more comfortable that not being able to focus for more than a couple of minutes at a time on something is totally fine. You know, that's really okay. I'm not that good at focusing on something for a long period of time either. So, you know, I don't know if anybody else has noticed, I've tried to be subtle, but, you know, I absolutely cannot sit through a talk. So I always sit on the edge and in the back, and I get up and wander around and come back. And I'm okay. I've been successful. You know, and I just can't. I can't sit for an hour and a half talk. I can barely sit through my own hour and a half talk. And I teach college, and I break my lectures up into minutes sometimes. You know, I do a 2 or 3 minute description of something, and then I do something else. And I have kids moving around. These are college students. Because I know that there are people in that room that can't sit. I teach 3-hour-long classes, and I know there are people that can't possibly focus more than 10 or 15 minutes at a time and still be functioning. You know, they're adults. They can make themselves stay in the seat, but they can't make their brains pay attention. So I don't think it's anything to worry about. It truly is just a difference. And it's different from what's expected in school, but who cares?
I agree, and she confessed before I could. When we were sitting at the park, I loved the stories, and I liked watching the kids, and that was almost enough input for me, and I started to pull weeds. And then I thought, this is not even my town. You know, I'm not sure this is a weed. But if I'd been in Albuquerque, I'd have just cleaned up all the ground I could reach, because I can't help but, you know, it's rude to jump up and walk around while somebody's telling a story, but, you know, they don't too much mind if you're pulling weeds. And I think reading Howard Gardner's, I already recommended this, but Frames of Mind will probably help you too, because just because your kid can't focus on one thing or remember one thing doesn't mean he's not totally focusing and remembering on something else. The first time we stayed in a hotel, not the first time I met Pam, but another time we went to a conference in Sacramento, and I didn't know my room number. I knew what it looked like by a plant and a chair. And Pam couldn't believe that I really couldn't remember my room number, but I couldn't. And I tried to charge my breakfast to her accidentally Saturday, but she caught me. You know, it wasn't personal. It wasn't mean. It's just, you know, what's the difference in 6:16, 6:18? I was lucky to remember the 6 part. So I was proud of myself. So I think you can get grown and not have the ability to remember the lyrics to songs, and nobody seems to care. But when you can't remember your phone number, they start to suspect you. So try to go easy on your own child, too, because I bet they do have strengths, and I bet they do have things they're focusing on. It just wasn't on your top 10 list. So it's easier to change your list to match what they're doing than to change what they're doing. And as to other books, what are books that we believe to be helpful reads for getting the underlying theme of unschooling?
Last weekend, I got to spend time with Thomas Armstrong, because he was one of our keynotes at the Sacramento conference. Thomas Armstrong has taken Howard Gardner's work and has done a lot of sort of rewriting into a more layperson's language, and he has a book out called The Myth of the ADD Child. And so whoever is interested in this particular topic, I would definitely read Thomas Armstrong's book. And there's another one that's got the word genius in the title. I blanked out. I spent time looking at it. Awakening Your Child's Natural Genius. Okay. And that's another one that he does talk about, you know, all kinds of labeled children. And I think you'd be very, very, very encouraged by reading, especially The Myth of the ADD Child. I think you'd just find him to be fascinating. Again, he was one, so he knows what he's talking about. And I think you would calm down. It's funny, maybe the parents need medication. They can stay calm while their kids do all these wonderful things. They'll be okay. They will focus. You know, eventually they'll focus on those creative ideas and they'll carry through on some. I know you're worried that they'll have all these brilliant ideas and never carry through on anything, but you know, it's okay if they're 9. It's even okay if they're 18. They'll be fine.
Okay, books. Well, I think the Linda Dobson book, the Homeschool Book of Answers, is fun because it's not the same person. Because if you start reading a book by one person who wrote 180 pages and you don't like them, you're gonna either quit or you're not going to like them for 180 pages. But that book's by so many different people, one being me, that it can't get that awful. You know, you can skip all the parts about me or you can read them all. But it's neat because it's different answers to the same questions. And so for in-laws and or people who are nervous, it's a good book. And not very sneakily, but it's very unschooling-leaning book. The Homeschool Book of Answers. Right?
Mm-hmm.
or Linda Dobson.
Linda Dobson edited that. And it's got a question and then six or eight answers and some photos and some quotes. And it's a painless book. Because I don't focus very well, I like books like that, with boxes and questions and answers and chopped up. It's easier for me than reading Harry Potter, which is text and text. And the other question was, has Zen philosophy affected your direction? For me, yes. But you don't need to read anything particular. One of the prizes I have for my That's Not Educational is a Zen Mind, Beginner Mind, I think, or some, you know, I have a couple of Zen books in there. I think it helps just because it's so calm down. You know, it's not, nothing's the end of the world. And in some other religions, a lot of things are the imminent end of the world. And that's just a new idea for former Baptist kids. A couple of the tapes I have are me and Richard, and those both have an underlying, not a blatant, you know, Buddhist philosophy, although Richard focuses his life there a lot. But I think there is an undertone of that on both To Question and Not To Question and Peaceful Parenting. And so for that I would say any book or website that has short things that you can remember, you know, so short ideas that you can write down, stick to your mirror, carry around in your pocket, wouldn't hurt. Is there somebody who has a specific book question need, like something for your relatives to read? The Mary Griffith stuff is good, the Unschooling Handbook.
Valerie.
The Unprocessed Child.
Valerie's book.
Which is right back there. You can get that here and take it with you.
I got one. So a few minutes ago I said, just stop worrying and be fully present with your child. And that, I realized when she mentioned Richard's name, was the title of one of Richard's talks. So obviously I have been influenced by it without even realizing it. That's a very Zen Buddhist kind of thing to say. And I'm not a Zen Buddhist by any means, but yeah, I just said that. So there's that influence. A book that I would recommend really highly would be The Fundamentals of Homeschooling. Sounds awful, doesn't it? It's not. It's wonderful. It's all about play and conversation and being fully present with your child. And it's by Ann Larson Fisher, and the subtitle is Notes on Successful Family Living. The other book that I would really highly recommend is Frank Smith's The Book of Learning and Forgetting. And another one that, again, is not a homeschooling book, but I would highly recommend is... I just blanked out on what it was. Okay, well, I'll tell you the other ones first and come back. Linda's other book, Art of Education?
The Art of Education.
The Art of Education, thank you, Linda Dobson. And a book by, I talked about math yesterday, and this is really about unschooling math, and it's Math Power by Patricia Kenshaft, K-E-N-S-C-H-A-F-T.
We're done.
Thank you very much, and we'll be around the rest of the afternoon if you want to talk to us.